The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
On today's program, we're going to talk to a caller who is retiring and is looking at, do I sell the house and downsize, or should I have family come and rent from me?
And that's filled with both emotional and financial implications. We're also going to talk to a caller that has way more money than they need to retire.
What are you supposed to do there? And we're going to look at how a good financial advisor job is to help manage your futures as life changes. So stick around.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are with us today as we talk about the world of finance. And, of course, you look at just about any study. Most people aren't 100% confident with the financial decisions they're making. They're not 100% confident with the portfolio, the way it's allocated. They're not 100% confident that they're saving enough for retirement, et cetera, et cetera. So we come here every week. We work with people like yourself during the week, but we're here on the weekends to be your financial advisor on the air and hopefully help you so you've got some greater confidence and make good choices in your life.
Yeah. So that wherever stage you're in, that you can sleep a little bit better at night. And it can get complicated because there's so many rules around tax rules.
There's no question it gets complicated.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's more risk in one's life than they even think that's there.
Yes.
But they don't realize that they may be putting their financial future in jeopardy.
With the decisions they're making.
Yes.
I had a discussion this last week with fortunately, he's relatively young, but not a client of our firm, but an acquaintance. And he laid out the scenario and he said, what do you think, Pat? What do you think? And I said, what do I think? And he said, yeah. And I said, I think that you have invested in a Ponzi scheme and that you should contact the FBI.
Wow.
And he said, why? And I said, let me just lay out what you just told me and put some context around Ponzi schemes and how they work. And you tell me if this doesn't look like a Ponzi scheme. And I said, have you done any background on this guy? He says, yeah, he did some background on the guy that I invested in his company, his supposed company. He has $4 million in judgments against him. I said, there's a good chance there's an FBI investigation already open.
Why did he invest with someone that he knew had $4 million?
He didn't know it until after. He invested years and years ago. He got checks from the investments for approximately 8 months. The tax information that was being sent back to him oftentimes had different tax ID numbers on them. I said, you have invested in a Ponzi scheme. I would bet everything I own that this is a Ponzi scheme, contact the FBI. And I said, let me tell you the upside. And he said, how could there be an upside? I said, you didn't make this decision when you were 70 and you didn't do it with everything you own.
The point of your story was, yes.
I said, this was terrible. And the gentleman in the Ponzi scheme is trying to get him to give him more money. And I said, you just told me everything that happened in the last investment. Why would you even consider more money? And he said, I don't know. And I said, because he's telling you why you need to get more money in order to make your previous investment whole again. That's what he's telling you. And he said, yes. And I said,
wow.
FBI, and just be glad it happened to you when you were in your 40s and not in your 60s or 70s.
Yeah, well, that's for dang sure. Because you can recover from things that happen
the earlier,
younger. When you're moving into retirement, right around the stage of retirement, it's not the time of life to make big bets. And sometimes people do it, and they don't even realize it.
I will share a quick personal story. When one of my children, there's four, so I'm not going to tell you which one of my boys was in junior high. He had a girlfriend, and he said, I'm going to buy her a necklace. And I went to the store with him, and he bought a $100 necklace for this girl.
They still together?
Well, I said to him, I think this is a big mistake. I don't think you should spend that much money on her. And he said, why? And I said, well, because when you break up, you're going to be sad about the breakup, and now you'll be out $100. why don't you just buy a $10 or $20 necklace? And his point to me was, I made this money. I can do what I want with it. And I said, good enough. I go home. His mother, my wife, says, why did you let him do this? And I said, why did you let him do this? Like, he has no free will. And I said, the upside on this is it happens at 7 to 800 bucks.
Yeah.
$100. I said, it could be 24 years of age and it could be a $50,000 ring.
Yeah. That's why Pat, by the way, did not spend a dime on his wife till they were married for at least 5 years.
Pretty close.
Anyway, let's take some calls here. 1-888-2-HANSEN if you'd like to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters with any question you've got on a financial matter that you're facing. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. And let's start with Michelle. Michelle, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello. My father recently died and left my three siblings and I some money. And my question is that money automatically taxed as income for each of us, or does it depend on what kind of investments he had his money in?
Yes.
The latter part.
Depends on what type of investments he had it in. So tell us about what you inherited. Sorry for the loss of your father.
Thank you.
Tell us about the investments themselves.
Yeah, so he had sold his home before he went into assisted living, and he put all that money into various different kinds of stock funds, and he also had his 401k invested in various stock funds.
Okay, and how much was the dollars in the various stock funds outside the 401k?
About $250,000.
That will come to you tax-free. And there'll be no income tax
that will
on
come
that.
Tax-free?
That's correct.
That money.
So we each can pass along about $5.5 million before there's estate taxes. But there are some times when there are some assets that are still subject to tax. But considering he took money that had already been taxed, bought some securities, the only taxation you could face is if there's been a change in the price of those securities when you sell them compared to the day when he passed away, so which would be negligible.
Yeah, minimal. How much money came from the 401k?
I think he exhausted most of that, probably about $50,000.
Okay, and were all three of you named as beneficiaries in the 401k?
All of us were named in all the money. I mean, he had a trust, and we were all named in it.
Okay,
yeah.
So the 401k, those dollars will be taxable to each one of you at your ordinary income tax rates. So what you pay on those dollars might be different than what your two sisters pay on those, because they will be taxed at ordinary income based on the family's household income. So that $50,000,
right.
You have a choice, though. You can put those into a beneficiary IRA and then stagger those payments out over a series of years.
May or may not be worth the hassle.
I probably, if you were sitting in my office, because each one of you inherited approximately $17,000 in this, depending upon the family income, I might have it paid out over 2 or 3 years, or maybe all of it immediately, just because it's probably not worth the hassle. I would use it as a planning technique.
What, any other assets?
No.
Okay, yeah. So that's your only thing you need to worry about is what came out of the 401k. Typically, what we find is when inheritance, the only time people get stuck with tax, not the only, but typically, it's in 401ks and IRAs, so retirement accounts, and annuities.
And sometimes savings bonds, but very, very rarely.
You don't see them as many anymore.
You don't see them as much at all. But mostly annuities and qualified pension plans or IRAs.
The rest of the assets are stepped up to a fair market value. So let's assume your dad had bought stock years ago at a dollar and it's worth $100 now. All that gain is forgiven at death. And the heirs can receive it with no taxation.
Which is strange.
But that's the tax law.
But that's the tax law.
So.
Yeah, that's not what I would have expected. I would have expected the exact opposite.
Yep. No, that's not how it works, though. So you're fine. And quite frankly, I would probably pay that IRAs out directly to the families just to get it over with and pay taxes on it.
All right. Well, that's very helpful. Thanks so much.
All right. Appreciate the call.
Thanks for calling, Michelle. And stretching the IRA sometimes makes sense, but there's also rules you got to follow and
It can be cumbersome and for smaller amounts. There are probably financial advisors out there right now screaming at the radio that we're morons. We're practical. And you might be right about
that. Well, you know, but how it depends. How complicated do you want your financial life, or how simple do you want your financial life? And if it, if the degrees are negligible as far as what it does to your net worth for having a simple life versus a complex life, if it were me,
choose the simple.
Says, Scott, here's two options. You could have a lot of complexity. I sometimes see people that have advisors that have them in all kinds of crazy stuff. This kind of partnership here, private equity thing here, a hedge fund here. All get this limited. Others, you're in this limited partnership, this other apartment complex here, etc. And it's just some person who had sold their business. They're thinking, I didn't want this level. This is more complex than my stinking business was.
Yeah,
didn't have to be that way.
It can be easy.
You don't have to live like Donald Trump. All those different partnerships, all different things.
Yeah.
There's people with significant wealth that have very simple financial lives. Very simple financial lives. Yeah, anyway, if you have got a question regarding something else in your life, 888-2-HANSEN. And we're going to talk with Stan in Colorado. Stan, you're with Hanson McLean.
Thanks for taking my call, Scott and Pat.
Hi, Stan.
Hi. I could give you a lot of detail, but I'll try and cut right to the main reason I need your advice.
All righty.
I'm retiring next year in August at 65 and a half. 6 months later, the spring of 2019, I will turn 66 and I'll start drawing Social Security. My wife and I purchased a home 4 years ago that was, I think we paid $308,000 for. We owe $223,000 on it. Our monthly mortgage is a little over $1,600 a month. That is more home than we need when we retire. However, we have our granddaughter and her husband living in the downstairs. It's basically a 4,000 square foot home, pretty much the same up and down. We have everything we need up above. They have everything they need down below. And we have asked them when they graduate from college next year if they would be interested in paying us in the neighborhood of $1,000 a month, and I'd also like to get utilities from them, to continue to live there, and they seem very thrilled with the idea.
I'm interested.
And my wife is thrilled with it. I think that fact takes away the you've got too expensive a house for your retirement argument, in my mind.
Okay.
I'd like to see what you can ask me any other questions you want.
All right, let's walk through this. So what did you say the value of the home is today?
308.
And what
today it's probably worth about $390,000.
And what do you say? What did you say you owed on it?
We owe $223,000.
Tell me about the rest of your financial life. So you're going to get Social Security. Are you or your wife receiving a pension?
I have a pension from work that will pay me if I set it up so my wife gets a full my full amount if I die. I would get $1,138 a month.
And what other assets do you have?
I will get $1,990 from Social Security if I start taking it 66.
Okay.
And I have an annuity that's $160,000. I have a $10,000 IRA. I've got a 401k that's about $21,000 right now. I've got about $50,000 to $60,000 in gold and silver.
Do you own any other properties?
Life insurance policy. Do not own any other properties. My wife has a home in Mexico, but it's probably not worth a whole lot.
And you, how big is this life insurance policy you have on yourself?
I think it's $250,000.
And does it have cash value inside of it, or is it a term policy?
I'm sorry.
How much are the premiums a month? You recall
$99.
Okay, so it's a term. It's a term policy.
Which you won't need at retirement.
By the way, you won't need. So what do we think? We think it's a terrible idea. You can't afford it. So if you're talking about...
Well, it depends how long you're living there.
But he's talking about... Are you talking about moving out yourself?
No.
Oh, we're staying in there.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm looking at Pat Crossline.
My wife and I will continue to live there.
Oh.
And our granddaughter and her husband will live downstairs.
For $1,000 a month?
Yeah, so now...
Don't give us $1,000.
Yeah,
it's a no-brainer.
I like it.
Let me tell you why. I know why I like it. One of the reasons I like it. Not, let's see if it's the same one. Tell me one of the reasons you like it.
Well, I just think it's probably enjoyable for you.
You get to live with your grandkids.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sounds kind of cool.
I don't have any grandchildren, but my niece just had a baby, and the first thing my wife asked is how many days a week does she get to watch the baby?
Really? My wife was so excited about watching the baby.
This is the oldest one.
Perfect. And you like your do you like your son-in-law?
Oh, he's they are a handsome couple, a polite couple. They're hardworking.
Does he mow the lawn?
Very fine. They're good, huh?
Does he mow the lawn?
That's a good question. He doesn't mow it as often as I would like him to.
All right, he mows the lawn, though. I think it's a great idea.
Let me ask a couple other questions. Is that mortgage, is that a 30-year fixed rate mortgage?
It is, I believe, yes.
Okay.
And what's the interest rate on that?
4.375, I believe.
Yeah, I'm going to throw one other curveball at you. You know what I would consider doing? I would consider
refinancing.
How old's your wife?
She is almost 2 years older than I am.
Okay.
But she has her own business. And she's working, and she wants to continue to work, not retire. And she probably makes 2 to 2.5 times what I do.
You are a smart man. No,
I'm interested to hear what you have to say, Scott.
Of deferring your Social Security.
I think that's a good idea.
I've run the numbers on that. I know what I will lose by waiting. I know what I will gain. If I live to 85, I will gain $53,160, but I don't think I'm going to live that long.
Yeah, so what's your so you stated that. Do you think you have a shorter than average life expectancy?
Well, my mother died at 51. My dad died at 69, but he had mesothelioma. He wouldn't live long. My mother had some health issues that I don't have.
How about brothers and sisters?
I'm very healthy. I'm very active. But I just don't, my gut doesn't tell me I'm going to live that long.
All right. Well, you can split the difference. Why don't you kick it out to 67 or 68?
Yeah, and draw off that annuity if you need to.
And draw off that annuity.
Right.
You're going to get more growth in the, you're going to get more growth in the Social Security than you're going to get in that annuity.
That's right.
Right. I'll get what, 8% or something? 8% a year?
Yep.
8%.
That's something I consider.
I would first thing I would actually recommend you do is actually sit down with one of our advisors to actually do the calculation. But thumbnail.
I have an appointment with one of your advisors tomorrow at 1 o'clock.
Oh, well,
hopefully you don't get totally conflicting advice.
Yes.
Tony's joking.
So, but the thumbnail is that I'd probably kick that off till age 68, probably 70, but
I think it really depends on what you really think of life expectancy.
Yeah, at the end of the day. Because numbers only said take it at 70 and start a distribution from the annuity.
And I want to get a little deeper on your wife's business is like.
Yeah. So, anyway, I like the idea of your grandkids living with you. And the only way you're going to get the grandkids
kind of
to live with you is to get your daughter to live with you. It's kind of it comes with a package.
Yeah.
So appreciate the call.
Glad you called.
Thank you very much.
You know, it's interesting, Pat, Stan was talking about his wife has this other business that she plans to keep working. We see more and more people doing some sort of work in retirement. 2/3 of baby boomers, which they are, obviously, state they want to continue some sort of employment during retirement. And that's not, they're obviously a big chunk of people that have to work at retirement. They just, for whatever reason, just don't have the financial assets. But there's also a big chunk that are doing so because they want to. And there's some correlation. The higher one's education level income.
Makes sense.
The more likely they are to continue working in retirement.
Makes sense. If I'm a college professor, come on.
No, I mean, it's if you've got a job that is it's more intellect for you, less if you can find
labor,
no physical labor that's not too taxing on your schedule that allows some sort of flexibility in your life.
Correct.
And yet you're adding value to others and being intellectually challenged. Why wouldn't you continue?
Exactly.
Why quit doing that?
So if I was a college professor, the first thing I would do is to treat students like me a little bit nicer.
Did you have a high school teacher tell you that?
I had a college professor tell me that the world needed ditch diggers too.
He told you that in college? The world needs, did you not do your homework? Why?
I don't remember why.
He didn't like you, I'm guessing.
And then I said to him, I know, I will employ many. which might have been one of the reasons he didn't like me. But the idea of this retirement, the phased retirement, is the statistics bear it out that 81% of employers say that they would like to support, they say they'd like to support employees working past the age of 65. They say they would like it. But less than a third of companies actually allow their employees a transition from full-time to part-time work. So the last phone call, and we had a gentleman who was leaving his job, but he's talking about his wife who's self-employed and she's going to continue to work. There's a difference there. Because if she's self-employed, she can slowly, choose her hours, maybe shrink it a little bit or give away more responsibility to people that she works with or maybe even ownership itself.
Well, companies themselves are going to have to figure this out, because when you look at the unemployment rates, extremely low, particularly on jobs that require a lot of intellectual skills, managerial skills, some of those things, right? Unemployment, the labor market is very tight in those areas.
And there is something to be said for institutional knowledge inside of an organization, which is not everything is documented. If you've got someone that's been around for 20 or 30 years and you run into a situation that isn't run of the mill, oftentimes that employee can say, you know, we ran into something similar to like this and this a while ago, and this is how we handled it. So the employers are saying they want to do it.
And with the lack of immigration, less people coming. I mean,
Look at Japan. But a third of the companies allow for it. So if you're in your 50s or 60s and your employer is actually having these discussions, try to get involved. You want to ask your employer, is there some sort of transition? Now, if you're in your 20s or 30s, you want all those old guys to leave. You want some more room at the top.
Come on. No, but we talked to a lot of people that, frankly, we talked to a lot of people that have got they've done a good job saving. They got some assets. They just are grinding too hard.
That's it.
Right? Like, I'm running too hard. I'm 58. I'm on the road all the time. I got too many direct reports. I can't keep up with my email.
I work when I'm on vacation.
They're running too hard.
I find myself returning emails on Saturdays and Sundays.
Yes. You talk to guys and they're like, I can't. And it's like, who wants to live like that forever, right? But we've also talked to people who somehow managed to say, what if I leave that behind and figure out a way to work 2 weeks a month, 3 days a week, and cut that stuff
out? 8 weeks on, 4 weeks off.
So for some, if something like that thinks, you know, that resonates with you, we would encourage, in the same way we would encourage you to figure out your financial plans, make sure everything's so you could retire tomorrow fully. But if you also think, I wouldn't mind staying engaged at some point, we would encourage you to start having those conversations with your employer earlier and say, here's what I'm thinking. I'm planning on retiring in two or 3 years because I can't run like this. Is there a way we can figure out where I can still add some value to the organization?
They call them phased retirements. And public school teachers have done this years ago where they have job sharing. I know a number of school teachers that did job sharing until their children were out of elementary school, and then they went on to full time.
Yeah, but oftentimes that's because they were raising kids and didn't want to work full time.
There's the same difference though. Same difference. You can job share on the back end of your career just like you can in the middle of it. Now, not every career you can do that for, but you certainly could possibly lower your scope of responsibilities and transition. Why are employers not wanting to do it? Some are afraid that they're going to have to continue to pay the same amount of benefits, whether you're part-time or full-time.
Well, that's part of it.
There's a cost associated. Yeah. Some of them are afraid that they're not quite sure of how the Department of Labor is going to treat this in terms of age discrimination or not age discrimination, or why you're doing it for some employees and not other employees, and why you can't offer a blanket to everyone.
But also, frankly, sometimes companies will... they want to replace them with a newer worker at a much less wage.
That is true.
And if we look at some of the lack of wage growth over the last decade, if you dig deeper, I was looking at a study recently, you dig deeper, the lack that it has, there actually has been wage growth in many different professions. But it's
the level of experience coming into that profession.
Correct. The newer workers start at much lower levels, and the part-time that has masked some of the wage growth. So if you're thinking, I read these studies, but you're thinking, frankly, I'm making more than I was 10 years ago. Why is that not buried out for the average American? It's because of some of these issues. But there's an article, a decent article, on this phased retirement and kind of talking through this. It was on a CNBC site, but there's a link to it at our website at hansonmclain.com. If that seems of interest to you, and encourage you to go check it out. But, you know, it's interesting. Retirement, it's changing and looks –
Well, first of all, retirement is a relatively new concept in the history of human, so it naturally has to change. It will change because it's such a new concept. We'll have iterations.
Kind of a new experiment, maybe.
It is.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue with some calls. 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. You're listening to Hanson McLain's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLain's Money Matters. Scott Hanson here.
Pat McLain.
Hope everyone's having a great day, great weekend, as we are in September.
Yes.
Kids are fully back in school.
Yes.
Kids back to college.
Yes. It's calmed down a little bit around the house.
Schedules.
Yeah.
Back in place. Everyone's happy.
I just remember when my youngest out of the four kids, when he started driving, it changed everything.
It changed everything. You got a twinkle in your eye just thinking about it.
Yeah. Just kind of
not
like,
playing the taxi anymore.
Yeah. Which I was just thinking, it must have, you know. And my parents must have driven me places when I was that age. They must have. I had older brothers, though.
You know, I remember
I didn't walk everywhere.
When I was in junior high and high school, I spent half my life grounded.
You did?
And a lot of it was,
okay.
I did.
You're grounded!
My stepmother was
Wait, now
written.
Why? Why would anyone after hearing
you're,
that want to...
You're grounded!
Why would anyone after hearing that want to continue to listen to the show where you give them financial advice and encourage them to come and visit us?
Here's how stupid I was.
Okay.
Half the time was because, this before cell phones and all that, my mom was going to be picking me up somewhere at 7:30, and she'd be there, and I wouldn't show up until 8:10, and waiting for me, and would be ticked naturally.
Naturally. And where were you? Just ever?
I walked to Jack in the Box or something.
It never clicked.
I just wouldn't. She's mom. That's her job.
Okay.
That's what I must have been thinking. I don't know. It's different when you're a parent.
Yes.
So. I don't know why we're on this.
I'm saying, back to school. Them going back to school now isn't as big of a deal as
for you.
For me, oh yeah, you've got young ones at home.
Well, I'm talking about this a radio show. The rest of the listeners is what I was thinking.
Oh yeah,
them. Yeah.
you want to talk about what they're interested in?
The mics are on. We're on the radio.
Why
don't we go to
my
caller?
Favorite subject?
1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the program. 1-888-2-HANSON. We're talking with Kenneth in Northern California. Kenneth, you're with Hanson McLain.
Good morning, Scott and Pat. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for joining us.
I have a question. My wife and I are getting really close to the RMD age where we start having to withdraw our money. When we start doing this RMD, we're going to have cash, and we'd like to know, you know, what options are out there for us to invest in where we can minimize our taxes and maybe optimize our return.
So let's kind of walk through, and this is a fairly common question. Depending on the situation, we like to start addressing the RMD situations earlier because you can use the Roth conversion.
If appropriate.
So let's kind of walk through a couple of questions then.
How old are you, Kenneth?
I'm 68. My wife's 69.
And how much do you have in combined retirement accounts, IRAs, 401ks?
Oh, probably million and a half.
Okay. And are you taking any distributions from these accounts now?
No.
And what's your ballpark family income, say, 2017?
Just with Social Security and pension, it's probably close to, I would say, 90K.
Okay. So, so you've been deferring these dollars and beginning really next year for your wife and then the year after for you, you're going to be having to take about almost about 60 grand a year.
And you're both on Social Security.
Well, she's on pension. I'm on Social Security, yes.
And was she is she qualified for Social Security?
No, school teacher.
All right. And tell us about the rest of your financial situation. You own a home. Do you owe any money on that home if you do own a home?
We have no. We have zero debt.
Okay. And do you have any money in a brokerage account or savings accounts? What's the rest of the assets look like?
We have about maybe $200,000 in a brokerage and savings.
Okay.
And what? So you save these dollars in your retirement accounts. You're both retired, correct?
Correct.
How long ago did you guys retire?
About three years ago.
Okay. And are you comfortable with your current lifestyle?
Yes, we are.
If I sent you $30,000 a year more, would you spend it?
Well, if it was Pat's personal funds, probably.
Well, not if I didn't. If you,
if I sent you, sure.
Why wouldn't I? if you had $30,000 or more a year in income, would you spend it?
We do take vacations, but we pretty much eat off of our investments other than the IRAs.
So what's your plan with these dollars? What's the ultimate game plan? You're saved for retirement. Now you're now retired 3 years. You're not spending those retirement dollars. What's the objective? In all seriousness, so is the objective to leave it to kids? Is the objective to leave it to charity? Is the objective
basically leave it to kids as much as possible? Yeah.
Okay. So if that's the objective,
yes.
If that's the objective, what you could simply do is when you have the required minimum distributions, have the money come out, the distribution that's required to come out. You'd want to design it because you'd want to design it such that you've got some stuff that would be converted to liquid cash relatively easy. So have it come out for your distributions. Have it go into a separate brokerage account or maybe the brokerage account you have set up now. And invest in a tax-efficient
portfolio.
Portfolio, like maybe a couple index stock funds.
Or some ETFs. But what you would do is if your required minimum distribution is, let's say, it's going to be ballpark about $60,000. We do it here at Hanson McLean all the time. We say, okay, we're going to take this distribution. We withhold taxes on it for the client. We send it off to the Franchise Tax Board and the federal government, the IRS, and then we transfer the rest into a brokerage account and we invest that tax efficiently. And that's what you should do.
The challenge you're still going to have is this distribution is considered taxable income to you. Now, for years, there was a provision that in the tax code that was expiring every year and Congress would extend it year. It finally became permanent this last year. And it gives people who are in required minimum distributions to make a gift to charity directly from the IRA. Rather than have it come through there. So if you're giving anything now or you want to in the future, we would highly encourage you to do it directly from that IRA, given the income level you're at today. Otherwise, there's nothing. It's going to come through.
And you're going to pay taxes on it, and there's nothing you can do about it. Nothing.
Okay.
Not a thing. So
with the distribution, you're suggesting also go into a bond fund or something to minimize taxation?
Well, no. It depends. If your goal is to leave as much money as possible for the children, you want to be a little bit more aggressive.
Yeah, a long time. I would have it. Let's just say you bought an S&P 500 fund or a total stock market index fund.
And not worry about the day-to-day, month-to-month, year-to-year fluctuations because you're investing it for your children, not for yourself. Now, that's easier said than done.
Gross tax deferred, you end up passing away, they receive it with a stepped up in basis, all the capital gains forgiven. So it's a pretty good planning technique.
But it's easier said than done because it's going to have market volatility involved in it, and you may or may not respond to that market volatility. So we'd have to look to see how your 401k or IRA is allocated now and what your risk tolerance is and back into it from that manner, but you would want to invest it tax efficiently. So do you know how your IRA is allocated now, like stock to bond ratios?
It's about 70-30. It's pretty aggressive. 70% stocks.
Which is probably fine because you've got
tons of money and you're not
and you've got a long life, a long time horizon.
Yeah, and as long as you haven't reacted negatively to any market gyrations in the past, it's probably fine.
Okay.
It's probably fine. And do you manage it yourself or do you use a third party?
I use a third party currently.
Okay. Yeah. So it as long as you actually know what's going on there, the second question I would have is I assume you have a living trust in place.
Yes, I do.
Okay, perfect.
Good.
Perfect. You've done a great job, Kenneth. You've done a great job. Your wife was a school teacher. What did you do for a living?
I was an engineer. I'm in Silicon Valley, you know. We all do tech work.
Okay. You've done well for yourself.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Well. Yeah.
All right, well,
so enjoy it, or better yet, just spend it. You're not going to run out of money. Just spend it.
Well, if he wants to.
If it makes you happier. Some people have a hard time spending it. I get that.
I do, too.
I understand that.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with not spending it. That's for dang sure.
Yeah. But it's okay to spend some, too. Go to the Olive Garden every once in a while. Did you see that? All the Applebee's that are closing down?
No.
The Applebee's, they're closing down a bunch of Applebee's. And
they own Olive Garden, too?
No, they own, that's Darden, I think, that owns Olive Garden. Applebee's, and they're closing another chain down.
But, you know, it's funny. So,
oh, these and the IHOP.
IHOP's closing down? And what is
a number of IHOPs. What's wrong?
I don't know.
Who doesn't love the IHOP? These are restaurants that brought back great memories of bringing my children to when they were younger. Wouldn't you ever bring your kids to the IHOP when they're little?
Oh, yeah, they get syrup everywhere.
Big and
Tutti,
fresh and fruity.
Sugared out.
They get the big
like,
and...
Like, getting more carbs shoved into these kids?
Big and Tutti, fresh and fruity. No, and also,
So, look, many of us hit retirement wishing we had more money saved. But there are quite a few that get to retirement that have more money than's needed. And...
Well, especially him because he had pensions and Social Security at $90,000 a year, and the home was paid for.
But it's really important to sit and think what really do you want these dollars for? Because you may want it to go to your kids, but you might not all of it want.
You might want some of it go to charity. You might want it. I have a client doesn't get to see enough of the grandkids. Doesn't really need to take the money out of the doesn't spend the RMD. I said, do you get to see enough of the grandkids? Never get to see enough grandkids. I said, do you want spend some time with the grandkids?
Give them a ticket out there.
I said, give them a ticket out or plan a big vacation. Rent a beach house or a lake house for a week or 2 weeks. Those grandkids will show up. Trust me. If you bring them to a nice enough place, they will show up.
That might be a great investment.
That might be your best investment.
Maybe. It's just good to think about those things. It reminds me of another client we had, Pat, years ago. He came in and he was talking about how his trip, and he was talking about the lay flat beds. He went to Europe late, and I'm like, would you fly like first class? He said, yeah. I'm like,
did he strike you as someone that would buy first class?
No, I said, I can't believe it. I said, you've always seemed so frugal. And he says, well, I just made a decision. Either I'm going to fly first class or my kids will.
That's funny. So he just he's like, one of you is going to fly first class.
But I tell you, and it's interesting, Pat. I know we had another client that, didn't have children, that was similar situation and hadn't really done much charitable giving in the past. But when we kind of talked to this, think about it, then we encouraged them, why don't you just earmark a portion of the day and why don't you see about this a charity that's important to you and see getting behind it. And it really changed the way they viewed the excess money they had.
Right. It was a tool now. It was a way. In many situations, giving money to a charity, especially at an older age, is part of your legacy. It's how you leave your mark on the world. Especially if you don't have children.
Yeah, well, whether people think about leaving your mark or just thinking, how can I continue to bless others during my lifetime?
Okay, well, I'm not going to get into their minds. I just want everyone to remember me.
That guy was a real piece of...
No, I don't want to remember me that way. Want me to remember me in a positive manner.
McClane, we'll get like a, I've got like a bronze bust. I mean, give them to all the kids to put on that fireplace.
In front of every one of our offices.
How about an oil painting?
In front of every one of their offices.
Get a big oil painting. You know, like you go into the Marriott and there's those like,
oh, the Marriott? Son.
Yeah. Like Pat. Just
and
Pat.
Me in a Hawaiian shirt.
And like a smoking jacket. Velvet smoking jacket.
Yes.
To be good.
That's, right. That's the legacy I'm looking for.
All right. Well, we're going to transition, turn this time of the program for our real advice segment. And during this segment, we typically will talk with one of our own advisors at Hanson McClain and hear about a situation that they encountered with a client or a prospective client or something along those lines, and how we worked with the individual. And as our attorneys like to remind us, that which we tell you that their experience may or may not be indicative of everyone's experience, and you might have a different experience. So in any case, we've got Eric Henry on as our guest today. Eric is a certified financial planner professional. Got more than 20 years in financial services and lives in Northern California and as an advisor in our Sacramento office. Eric, welcome to Hanson McClain's Money Matters.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, glad you're here. So tell us the whatever situation you want to talk about.
So this is really kind of an ongoing situation with an existing client and have been clients for at least 15 years of the firm. But initially, it was a husband-wife client, and retired husband from phone company, nice retirement assets, fairly decent Social Security income, somewhere in the range of, you know, $1,400 to $1,600 for him, and no pension. But the wife had a teacher's career, so she had a somewhat decent pension and a very minimal amount of Social Security and no savings set aside in any other kind of a retirement
account. Okay.
So what happened, unfortunately, is that through retirement, the husband unexpectedly passed away, and there was a fairly significant drop in the Social Security income, which
and you say there was no other retirement savings?
There was retirement savings from the husband.
Oh, got it.
But the wife didn't have any retirement savings. But
she did receive a pension, just not Social Security, correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. She had a fairly small pension. She was in teaching services or the teaching profession for 30 years, but she took about a 10 or 12 year break in there, so she didn't have a long tenure as a teacher. So her actual pension was only around $1,000 a month.
Okay.
So.
And with Social Security, you had an offset. Was it reduced for windfall elimination?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Which actually, if this was a four-hour show, we'd actually explain how the windfall elimination provision works. But I really get a kick out of using that word for teachers' retirements on Social Security, the word windfall.
Yeah. It's a bit of a misnomer.
Yes.
So in any event, what happened is that her Social Security income in total fell to, you know, around $700 a month from where it had been at $1,600 to $1,700 a month. So it's fairly substantial. The natural inclination was just to increase the distribution that they were taking already from the IRA, except all of this transpired at the same time that we went through an economic downturn, and one of their adult children actually moved back home. So rather than there being a decrease in their overall or her overall need for income, it actually went up.
Because the adult child moved home.
Exactly, exactly. And so what happened is that, we continued to meet after that. My advice was that she really ought to consider selling the home. They were already, you know, before her husband passed away, they'd already decided that the house was too big. But having that adult child move home seemed to throw kind of a wrench in that plan at the time. So while we discussed it, and while she was receptive to the idea, it just never really came about. So from that point, we just continued to work together. She was taking a tax withholding, which surprised me, that was substantially greater than what she needed to. And when I delved into that further, I asked her, well, why are you doing this? And she goes, well, I just want to create a mad money account every year. I pay my property taxes, and then I just use the money for whatever.
For savings.
For savings, exactly. Exactly. So So in any event, we worked through that. I got her to back off of the withholdings on the distribution to get it down to a more manageable level. I actually did talk to the daughter and simply let her know, you know, your mom is taking a distribution that is unsustainable long term.
You talked to the daughter in front of the mother, though.
They,
you didn't call
would
the daughter.
They come in together.
Yes.
Exactly.
So you recommended either selling the house, lowering the distribution. Did you ever consider a reverse mortgage on the house?
Actually, I did. I asked her to look into it. I told her it was a good planning option for her. It seemed obvious that she wasn't going to sell the home. She said, you know, I like the idea, but my fear is what happens when I die? You know, what's going to happen for my daughter?
Yeah.
And I said, well, you know, that's the issue.
Well,
that's the challenge.
Correct. And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, which is one of the goals of a Scott and I were talking about on the show before you joined us earlier, Eric, was you've got to decide what your objectives with the assets are. And if your objective is that you live a lower standard of living so your children will receive money, that's fine.
As long as you understand that.
You understand that.
Right.
That's an okay decision. So where did they land at the end? So did they ever sell the house?
Still living in the house.
And the daughter still living with them.
Daughter's still living with them.
You know, I see nothing wrong with that as long as that's what both of them want. I think it'd probably be the greatest thing that happens for many people. Or, conversely, the worst thing that happens. It depends on whether it was forced for economic reasons or other reasons and their relationship. So,
you know, it's funny. Actually, what you said right at the beginning of that is exactly what's happened. Over the last few years, our client's health has been changing. It's actually worked out for her benefit that her daughter's been there because now she's doing the majority of the driving.
Perfect.
And she's helping her mom get around. So
mom gets to age at home. So the house, the size of the house makes sense.
Exactly.
And maybe they lower their income a little bit, but that, you know, they'll get by, right?
Yep. So, the way this has all worked out now, it's really smoothed out. There were some disruptions at first, but I think, you know, for my client, obviously, the challenge was really getting to be more aware of where her money goes, because when her husband was alive, he took care of everything. He ran the household.
And that's not unusual. So, Well, you know, thank you for joining us, Eric. We appreciate you being a long-term member, as many of our advisors are here at Hanson McLean. But, you know, the end of the story is, we all have a view of our future, of what it will look like. But the reality is it very rarely plays out the way we think about it. I like to use the word futures because there's a whole host of futures in front of us. And they change. And the financial situation changes, and our reaction and how we deal with money in those financial situations and our relationships with others change. People enter our life, people leave our lives. But
that, you know what, Pat, I mean, that is the reality, right?
That's flat out.
And for married couples, one of them is going to leave through death. That's reality.
That is. And oftentimes, most of the time, multiple years apart from each other, especially if a death occurs
early.
Yeah. Early. And the good advisor, you know, Eric told them, look, this house is probably a little bit too big for you to sustain because of your Social Security benefit going away at the first death. Now, we planned for it. We talked to the client about it. We informed them of what's going to happen. But oftentimes, the client's like, I'll worry about it when it gets there. In this situation, it worked out perfectly. The daughter moved home. It was good for the daughter. It was good for the mother. But they did it with consultation with their advisor. And the advisor doesn't tell you what to do. Eric gave this lady three options.
And navigated through year after year.
Yes.
Let's see what's
happening
now.
These three options? These are three options. We don't have to make a decision today, but at some point in time, we may want to exercise a decision on one of these three options. And that's advice, because the financial advisor's not living your life. They're just helping you with the financial aspect of it.
And as things change, I think sometimes people have an expectation that a financial advisor's job is to figure out which way the economy's going, which way the market's going to go, and then, you know, let's buy into stocks now and let's get out of them, and let's buy into real estate now and get out. Let's get into gold now and get out. Look, most people can't predict the markets. No one can accurately after time. So adjustments to your portfolio really shouldn't – I mean, there's – yeah, we actively manage and do some rebalance.
There's
some
times
that
you might want a little bit more risk or a little less risk.
But as far as, you know, wholesale changes to portfolio, they're not based upon the markets. They're more based upon what's happening in your life.
Changes in your situation.
I had a client not too long ago. Her husband passed away. She's nearing retirement. They'd been saving money, had a good portfolio saved up with the plans of retirement. It was unfortunately, it was a cancer type thing where it was a slow death, frankly.
Yeah.
And they were concerned about things. And I said, if you're concerned, why don't we just sit in cash and just wait this thing out? You have enough on your plate right now. Right? The risk tolerance changed during that time.
Right. Not as a result of the market.
No, her life changed.
And so what did they do?
Sat in cash. He ended up passing away, unfortunately, several months later. After that, we're kind of making a plan. We had a slow plan to get back to
the future.
Kind of a,
we
don't know what the future is now.
It's futures.
Changed. Futures.
What they were thinking about their future was going to be changed at a visit at a doctor's office.
That's right.
Or a phone call. That's how it works.
That's how life works.
That's how it works.
And we all have certain plans.
We can plan. We plan. We're financial planners. I plan everything. I plan what my week looks like three times a week. I plan it on Saturday, Sunday, and again on Tuesday and Wednesday, four times a week. But it never turns out exactly like I thought it was going to be.
So a good financial advisor is one who can help you navigate as life happens.
And they will tell you what you need to hear, not what you want
to
hear.
Which is why we talk about the importance of being with a fiduciary financial advisor, an independent advisor that does not sell financial products, but is there to have their economic interest aligned with your economic interests. And
that doesn't make it perfect, but it certainly makes it better.
Absolutely. It certainly reduces some of those conflicts.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about, are you getting this advice because it's in their best interest, or are you getting this advice?
And you could go to a robo-center, but you're not going to get a personal interaction with someone. Once you build a relationship with anyone that's got a foundation of trust, it may be an economic relationship, but it's hard to not let it bleed into personal.
Yeah. Anyway, we are out of time at Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We're here every weekend at the same time. You can also get a podcast of this program at HansonMcLean.com. It's been great being with you. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you next week.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.